The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
And we are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA. Sam Webb, Ira Weintraub here on the Michigan Insider. I'm in Florida. Ira's in Ann Arbor. Mike Spath is somewhere in Michigan, not yet on vacation, right? Mike, how you doing this morning?
I'm good. Yep. I'm in Royal Oak, headed to the west side of the state on Friday. So can't wait. What are you doing in Florida?
NBA Players Association Top 100 camp. Also seeing some, seeing some football prospects as well. But yeah, the NBA Players Association Top 100 camp moved from Virginia, where it's been for years. I mean, I go back to the days when they were at, they were at VCU. Remember, Ira, back in the day, they were at VCU. Then they've been at UVA for a period of time, and they said they outgrew UVA. Even though the camp is smaller this year due to COVID, they brought it to where they did the NBA bubble at the Wide World of Sports. So
okay.
Down here covering
that. Very cool. We'll enjoy.
Yeah, man. Looking forward to it. Been looking forward to this conversation, Mike. So I'd want to start talking some hockey so that doesn't get swallowed by the news that is riveting and to the entire sports world, talking about realignment and college athletics. But let's just start off first talking Michigan hockey, and just give me your I asked on Twitter, what we just saw with the NHL draft, has that happened in any sport? I mean, forget just hockey, which it's unprecedented. Have we seen in any sport 1, 2, 4, 5? I know 4 hasn't played at Michigan, but you get the point. This is just an unbelievable, run of draft dominance, the likes of which I haven't seen before. And as you know, raises expectations for those who haven't even been paying attention to hockey. They're like, oh, well, a championship is guaranteed now, right?
Well, it is funny on the latter, Sam. I had quite a few people on Twitter, send me a message and be like, how did Michigan not win the national championship last year? How are they, how can they not be the favorite to win the national championship this year? And the answer to the first one is, well, they didn't get to play in the NCAA tournament because for COVID reasons, they got their game and their tournament ended before they even played. So who knows what they would have done? And the second part is, when you look at it on paper, if all four of those guys come back, starting with Owen Power, the number one overall pick, and right now, sources in Ann Arbor and in the hockey department feel really good about all four of these guys coming to University of Michigan in the fall. So if that's the case, they are the odds-on favorite with as much talent as they have. And that doesn't even factor in a lot of the other pieces that they have coming back. And as long as they get some goalie play, and that is a question mark with the departure of Strauss, man, they should be outstanding. But to go to your, unprecedented, I was trying to think about this and qualify this a little bit, too. And, the last couple of years, both Ohio State and Alabama, and now Clemson's rising up there, have been putting 4 or 5, I think Alabama one year had 7 first-round draft picks in the NFL, which is incredible when you think about how many programs there are competing in college football on a yearly basis. But nothing like this. Nobody, the articles have all been written, no program has coming close to this. And in hockey is different because college is not the single feeder system to the NHL. But even if you look at, high major juniors, you look at the OHL, you look at all the Canadian things that have got going on, no one has ever done something like this. And so it is a huge feather in the cap for Michigan hockey. I imagine if you're Mel Pearson and Billy McCault and the staff there, you walk into any recruit's house right now and just be like, what do you even say? You don't have to say anything. You just kind of slide Twitter or social media across and be like, oh, yeah, that was us on draft night, 4 guys in the top 5 picks. It is unlike anything I've ever seen in my life as a sports fan. So kudos to them. Kudos to all those guys. I mean, Owen Power's a great young man and had the chance to actually teach him last semester and was a hardworking student and certainly didn't seem like he, had this big ego and was going to get caught up in all this. And Maddie Beniers, another great kid, You know, Ken Johnson, who was the number five pick, I also had in my class last year, another really good kid who worked really hard. And just, you know, it's a great program. They're on their way, hopefully, to really big things because they haven't had an opportunity the last few years when it comes to the national championship and the tournament because of COVID and then being kicked out because of COVID. So really excited with fans back in the crowd to see what they can do at Yost Ice Arena this year.
Yeah, Mike, you raise so many great points and great and bring such great perspective there. I wonder how you feel. It is striking to me that these guys with pro prospects to this level, I mean, they are all top five picks, that they would forego that for an opportunity to come back to Michigan, or in Hughes's case, to come to Michigan and do something special. I mean, it's that's not me saying that if you know, guys don't come back, when they don't come back, it's all an ego thing. They just can't put their egos aside. People leave for a lot of reasons. I mean, you fear injury, right? Or it could be financial. There are several other reasons beyond vanity that people decide to make the jump. But still, Mike, as you look at these decisions, you know, that they, you know, it, whatever semblance of any kind of ego has to be at a minimum for these guys to come in. I mean, I would expect that the typical questions people would ask about a super talented team, are there enough pucks to go around? And, you know, is there enough limelight to go around? It just feels like, I mean, if guys are turning down being a top pick in the draft and coming back, feels like there won't be a shred of ego on this team.
Well, you hope not. And hockey is a different sport than basketball in the way that, you know, you have five guys. A lot of those guys are playing 35, 32 minutes a game. You know, the best forwards in the NHL are playing less than 20 minutes a game. You know, I mean, go back to the Red Wings heyday when Steve Yzerman was there and Sergei Fedorov and, you know, and Chris Draper and McCarty and Brendan Shanahan and Brett Hull. I mean, those guys, you know, four lines are being rolled out in a 60-minute game. So they're not playing 25, 30, 35 minutes. So they're already used to sharing the ice time. They're used to sharing the puck. You know, Red Berenson used to always say, and I think if you look up, like, hockey time, the amount of time that the guy actually possesses the puck versus the amount of time he's away from the puck and trying to get to the puck, I mean, it's staggering. A guy might be on the ice for 16 to 18 minutes a game, and he might possess the puck for all of 2 minutes of that 16 to 18 minutes. And so these are guys who are already used to being selfless and already used to being, you know, really part of a team. So I don't think that will, you know, that will really factor in, you know, too much. And goodness, I mean, I'll tell you, look, like JT Compher, Tyler Mott, and Kyle Connor, this is about 4 years ago now for Michigan hockey. I mean, you know, that's the beautiful thing about hockey too, is like, you don't have to say like, well, you know, these guys have got to share the balance. I mean, when you have a really, really talented team that can score, well, you can put up 5, 6, 7 goals a night. We haven't seen 7 goals since the 90s. But just about 4 or 5 years ago when Compher and Mott and Connor were there, you know, Michigan averaged 5.5 goals per game. So everybody is getting theirs. And it starts with Owen Power, and it starts with Maddie Beniers. If those guys do decide to come back and they say, hey, we're putting number one and number two aside for the betterment of the team. I mean, how are you, if you're anybody else on that team, how do you not say, well, right, that guy's willing to do it. The number one overall player in all the NHL draft is willing to set it aside to be part of something special. How do I sit there and go like, no, I want mine?
Absolutely. Great point. Talking to Mike Spath this morning here on the Michigan Insider and Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. So, Mike, yeah, Texas, Oklahoma, SEC. Yeah. What, just give me your, I don't want to interject with my opinion. Give me your take on what that means for Texas and Oklahoma, what it means for the SEC, what it means for college football.
Well, I think what the SEC is trying to do, the only reason that Texas and Oklahoma join the toughest conference in the country, especially if you're Oklahoma, who has won, I think they said, you know, six of the last seven Big 12 championships, you know, and has gone to the playoff, what, three times here in the last 4 years, the last 5 years. I mean, if you're Oklahoma, why would you voluntarily sign up to have to go through Alabama and Georgia and a rising Florida and a, you know, what could be a powerful LSU again and Auburn when they get their act together? Why would you voluntarily sign up for that when you own the Big 12 year in and year out? And the only reason that you sign up for it is because you understand there's about to be a seismic shift in college football. And what the SEC is doing is essentially saying, we understand where this is headed. We are going to start the race to whatever it is, 20 you know, teams in one conference, and then we are going to broker the deal to remake college football, because there's no way it can exist in its current state when you're adding Texas and Oklahoma to the SEC, even if you're not kicking anybody out. You know, it changes the geographical, it changes the playoff, because it doesn't make sense now that you're only getting one, you know, one school from each conference. Everything is about to change. I mean, at the very least, we're going to an 18 playoff, could be going to a 16 team playoff, could be going to, you know, 420 school conferences, or maybe it's less than that. And I think the SEC is just saying, look, like, if we can have Texas, if we can add Texas, we can add the biggest media market in the country that is available, and all the opportunities that come with that, they're obviously going for it. And so the Big Ten has to react, and the Big 12 looks like it's going to fade away. So there's a Pac-12 gobble some up. You know, this is a humongous domino. You can't even put it into words, guys, what's taking place here, because everything seems like it's about to change in the next 12 months.
Yeah, I agree. And you talk about, is it a race to 20? Is it a race to 24? What we know is that this is just another leg in the race, what Sankey just pulled off with Oklahoma and Texas. That is the vibe. That's the sentiment that's coming down there, that he's positioning the SEC. Go ahead, Ira.
So I want to jump in because I saw something this morning that the other commissioners that are a part of this college football playoff expansion, they've been having these conversations. No votes actually happened yet. And they're saying, pump the brakes. We're not ready to go to 12 now. They're saying, now we know why Sankey was pushing for 12, the expansion to 12 is going to be delayed because of this. At least that's the word as of this morning. There's an expectation that there will be a delay in the expansion of the playoff because now people see why Sankey was doing what he was doing.
Yeah, all right, so that may be. In the meantime, though, he was able to pull this off under a shroud of secrecy, the likes of which, I mean, it's impressive. Mike, think about it. Sankey is pushing for 12 in this playoff committee. Bowlesby is right next to him, right? It doesn't know that Sankey's poaching a couple of his teams. But now there's no secrecy. Now you know what he's trying to do. And the word from down south is he's pushing to bolster the SEC to the point where they have such a command of the South. They have so many marquee programs in their conference that, you know, the projections right now are $70 million per team once Oklahoma and Texas get there, and a few years down the line you add, you know, eight more teams at some point, Mike, you know, maybe you get into the nine figures. Why is that important? Is it because do they just want to bathe in cash? I'm sure they do, but they say Sankey has a long play. He believes that name, image, likeness is as we know it right now, is in its infancy, and that eventually name, image, likeness is going to include that TV money. And so the feeling emanating from his side of things is you better be build up the coffers as much as you can, because eventually you're going to have to be splitting that till with the players. And so so build that up now. And that's why he's determined, what they say, he's determined now next to take aim at the ACC.
Yeah, and, you know, you've heard the rumors. I've heard the rumors. You know, who's coveted in the ACC? I mean, Clemson, obviously with their name. Although the interesting thing about Clemson is they're a pretty significant brand right now, but they're in a tiny, tiny media market. And they, you know, South Carolina overall, the state of South Carolina is not that big of a media market. You know, so, but that said, I mean, it's Clemson and it's the biggest boy in college football, at the moment. I mean, I think Florida State, Miami are going to be actively sought after. You know, people, we always come back to the question and maybe you're about to get there. Like, what does the Big Ten do? I mean, if the ACC is a little bit vulnerable, and I don't necessarily say that, I want to say it's vulnerable, but I think what you mentioned the 24 teams or 25 teams. I think what you're ultimately going to have is you're going to have essentially like an NFL look. You're going to have an NFC and a AFC or whatever it ends up being. Uh-huh. And you're either part of it or you're not. And if you're not part of it, well, then so what? You know, to boo-hoo on you. And frankly, I mean, the SEC and the Big Ten are the two conferences that have that type of leverage and have that type of power because of how many media markets they control. And because of that, you know, they're going to be – if Kevin Warren – he's sitting there in his office in Chicago. I mean, like, this is his moment. Now, supposedly, Jim Delaney's being consulted because he engineered things in the past, and he's got that type of gravitas still. But, yeah, I mean, I think that's what you're ultimately going to be. And if someone was real smart, they would just decide, like, hey, let's just do a North versus a South. Let's make it easy on us. But in this expansion game where everybody's just trying to grab as many pieces as they can, you know, I think you're going to see so many weird – geographical misfits over the next couple of years. And if I'm the Big Ten, I mean, I'm making a play. I mean, again, you know, I know everybody hates them and to hell with Notre Dame, but I'm making a play for Notre Dame and saying, look, the ACC is not going to be there very much longer, and this is the way it's going to be. And if you're not in one of these two mega conferences, you're out. And if you're out, you can go play with the MAC. You can play with Conference USA because that's the only competition that you're going to have access to. So I'd make a play for Notre Dame. I'd make a play for Georgia Tech. You know, try to grab that Atlanta market as much as you can. You know, someone who lives in the shadow of UGA, I would try to grab North Carolina. And if you grab North Carolina, you're probably going to have to take Duke. And then I go for Virginia. I mean, you know, and that doesn't even include what you would do with the Pac-12 programs, which I think are in fair play here too. So, I mean, look, I'm just going through 1,000 dominoes in my head. Can you imagine what's going on through these conference administrators' heads right now?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, absolutely. I can't. At least I hope I can. I hope I can imagine what's going through their heads, or at least Kevin Warren's head. I hope that, to your point, you know, these properties in the ACC, including Notre Dame, because right now Notre Dame's the agreement they signed with the SEC says that as it stands, if they sign with a conference, they have to sign with the ACC. Now, all right, what's that contract worth, right? You can go to court and maybe you get out of that stipulation. But that stipulation doesn't matter if there is no ACC. So, you know, the race to try to compel, to try to convince some of those teams to leave is on. It's going on right now. Sankey he's visibly in talks and is about to land Oklahoma and Texas. Take a lesson from that. He is having conversations behind the scenes with the teams in the ACC, or some of them. So if you're Kevin Warren, you better be doing this. You know, the teams that you covet, those that are academically inclined, Mike, so the AAU members in the ACC, Carolina, Duke, Virginia, Georgia Tech. I mean, if you're Kevin Warren, you got to be on the phone back channeling those teams right now, don't you?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And you know, each of them are interesting because, you know, I think I might have mentioned this on the show before, but we had Mark Silver, who was the head of Big Ten Network, the president of Big Ten Network for the first, I don't know, whatever it was, 10 years, 12 years that the Big Ten Network was on. I had him talk to my class last year, and he said, look, the way that Jim Delaney evaluated this after Nebraska was kind of a knee-jerk reaction because things were starting to unfold. He's like, but when the Big Ten added Maryland and Rutgers, they added them for two reasons, for TV and for media rights opportunities. So it's not just TV because the TV game is changing. I mean, people are watching it on streaming services, but the market, right, to bring that presence. And so that was a big one. And then the recruiting opportunity, we've got to be able to add territories that are where a lot of recruits are being born, or a lot of the recruits are being groomed, because we know that the Midwest is shrinking a little bit and the Southeast is booming, and the East Coast is booming. And so if you're looking at those schools that you just mentioned, I mean, I just said, like, Georgia Tech comes with Atlanta and comes with a hotbed of recruiting in the state of Georgia. You know, North Carolina, Duke, you come with Charlotte, Raleigh, you know, that triangle there, great place for recruiting. You get two marquee basketball programs. You get, you know, good football. You know, you get something far better than I keep on hearing Kansas. Like, what does Kansas do for the Big Ten? You add a basketball power, but this is about football, people. This is about football, and Kansas brings nothing. Plus, it's a bad place to recruit, and, you know, most of Kansas City is in Missouri, not in Kansas. So, you know, it's not a place where you're getting a big bump from a media market. So, you know, I look at that. Virginia, as you guys said, I mean, that's a great place for recruiting. You know, you've already got the D.C., but Virginia is a good state for expanding that. Boston College, you know, not a great place to recruit, but Boston is a big town. So I look at all those. If you're not going to be able to make a play for Clemson and Florida State and Miami, either because those are just programs that, you know, don't fit with you academically, don't fit with you for just a lot of various reasons, and they're better in the SEC, then fine. Then you better take all those other big name marquee programs in the ACC.
Yeah, and it puts pressure on a lot of pressure on Notre Dame. I mean, I think pressure's on Notre Dame anyway. Let's say the ACC survives for the time being. I mean, these last standing conferences, they are going to be able to push Notre Dame around even more here in the coming years. Say, like you said, Mike, either you're in or we're going to just roll over. We aren't going to make any major allowances to make sure Notre Dame has a chance to qualify for the playoff. I think that's what's ultimately going to happen. But let's look out west. You mentioned what's going to come of the Pac-12. They were kind of like I kind of looked at them as the odd man out already, right, in the current format. So you got to believe SC especially, mm-hmm. would covet a chance. I mean, they love a chance to have Big Ten affiliation. And, you know, so to be able to get out west, the four California schools, Oregon, Washington, I don't even think you want the entire Pac-12, but could you get the best pickings from out there and then get to 24 that way? So grab a few from the ACC, grab a few more from the Pac-12, and then you talk about North versus South. Now you're Northwest versus Southeast. I'll take it, Steve or Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with you, Sam. I mean, I love that opportunity. I love the idea that, you know, you play, you know, whatever it is, maybe eight conference games against traditional Big Ten teams. And then your non-conference is not even your non-conference, right? Because it is your conference now. But you have four against the Pac-12, the West Coast region. And so you're taking on USC and Oregon and you know, maybe throw Arizona in there so you're not playing all the big dogs in one year. But, you know, here's where people are, like, freaking out. They're like, well, if they do this, like, you're going to keep on eliminating all these teams from the playoff. And that's where I come back to the idea that, like, this is changing the playoff because it has to. And if that's where fans can come out on top in this all this, guys, because if they do change the playoff and they do have these mega conferences, you know, what you're losing out is you're losing out in games against Western Michigan and Central Michigan. And, you know, that's an entirely different conversation of, like, what do those programs do? How do they exist if they're not playing the big paydays against, you know, the Michigans and USC's and Ohio State's of the world? And that's a conversation for another day. But if a fan is getting all these great games and the non-conference, if you lose two or three games a year, you're not being knocked out of the playoffs conversation. If it's just like, hey, the top two teams advance or the top four teams advance or something like that, I mean, you're going to see marquee football being played week in and week out. I mean, think about how much fun it would be if you knew that you're going into the Big House this year and every single one of those games was against what is traditionally a top 25 opponent. I mean, to me, that's incredibly exciting.
Yeah, super excited. Just chopping at the bit to get to the season, man. And my last one for you, Mike, just timeline. You said the next 12 months. You think we see more movement, you know, over the next year? Or it sounds like you think that, or or, you know, what are the odds of it taking a little longer to play out?
Well, I think it really depends on whether or not, I mean, I think once we get to the season, you'll see it die down because that'll be the focus. And these athletic directors and presidents are going to be so focused on, you know, just the education going on their universities, all the things that they have to do with COVID, figuring that aspect out. And so I think it'll take a time off. But, you know, I mean, really comes down to this, is if the SEC makes another move in addition to Texas and Oklahoma in the next couple of months, then how do you stand pat if you're the Big Ten? Right. How do you stand pat if you're the Pac-12? You know, and so, I know that, you know, yesterday there was a vote and the Texas and Oklahoma, you know, decided not to renew their media rights, which doesn't come into play until, what, 2025?
Right.
So, you know, on the surface, it looks like, hey, well, they can't do anything for 4 years, but that's, you can buy them out. You can do all these different, you know, finagling behind the scenes. And I expect that to take place. I mean, if you're the Big 12, like, what are you doing right now? Are you trying to say like, okay, we're going to hold on for the next 4 years, or are we going to figure out a way to, you know, make some changes to this right away? So, I do think that at some point, at the very least next summer, because summer is when everything dies down and nobody's got anything to talk about. You could see some movement again, but I bet you it's all going to come down to that next piece of the domino. And so if the SEC makes another move in the next couple of months, then all hell is going to break loose.
Gotcha. Well, Mike, first things first, though, the season getting ever so close. Cannot wait. Looking forward to catching up with you again in a couple of weeks. Enjoy your vacation, my friend, and we'll see you. We'll talk to you when you get back.
Okay. Sounds good, guys. Thanks very much.
All right, that was Mike Spath giving us his Inside the Huddle take. We need to get to a break. We'll be back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket.